Ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. It's time to get revved up for sports, sports, and guess what? More sports on the RPM Roundtable Podcast with Robin Clark, Paul McGaughey, and Mike Sesney.
Welcome to the RPM Roundtable Podcast for Thursday, March 21st. This is episode 6. My name is Paul. I'm here along with Robin and Mike. Right off the top, we're going to take a look at some games from last night. First of all, the Miami Heat managed to extend their winning streak to 24 games. Last Friday, the Heat began a road trip in Milwaukee that LeBron James dubbed the reunion tour because Wade is from Milwaukee. Then they came to Toronto. Obviously, Bosch played in Toronto for 7 seasons. Then they go to Boston, where Ray Allen played last year. And then last night, they made a stop in Cleveland, where they were trailing 67-40 with 7:44 left in the third quarter, and they end up coming back to win the game. And what this reminded me of was when I used to play NBA Live 95 for Super Nintendo. For the first half of the game, I would be one team and blow out the computer. Then in the second half, I would switch to the other team and try to beat like the lead that I'd built against the computer. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah.
So I think that the Miami Heat are bored and they're just trying to find new ways to win. The all-time record is 33 wins in a row by the LA Lakers. That was in the 1971-72 season. So the Heat still have a ways to go. Robin, I know you watched the game last night and then you're looking at their schedule going forward. How do you like their chances?
Well, I'm not certain that they'll get the record. Just looking at their schedule, as you said, the streak's now at 24, and their next, I guess what you would classify as a tough game, is in five games from now, Sunday, March 31st. They're at San Antonio, and I think that'll be the toughest test. The other teams that they play in there, I don't have the list in front of me right now, but I was reviewing it last night, and a bunch of teams who are multiple games under 500 and going nowhere. So as long as the Heat don't do what they did last night and dig themselves a huge hole, because it was an amazing comeback, but you're not going to come back from that deficit multiple times in a row. And so I think, as I said, the game that you should mark on your calendar, Sunday, March 31st, they're at San Antonio.
I agree, and that would be win number 30 if they're able to knock off San Antonio. And definitely not a good habit to get into, getting behind that much in games, because obviously against a good team, like a San Antonio, you're not going to be able to make that up.
No.
With 8 minutes left in the third quarter. Also last night, the Toronto Maple Leafs played. They defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-2. Heading into the game, the Leafs made some roster moves. First of all, they recalled Jake Gardner, and so in a sense, I guess Jake Gardner was freed.
Yeah, he was freed to come in and run amok on the Toronto Maple Leafs there. I thought it was kind of funny. I mean, he came in and it seemed like he was trying to be the savior that everybody was trying to downplay and say he's not the savior. That's not what we're bringing him in to do. And I just from my observations, it seemed like he was trying to do too much, and he caught himself down low pinching a few times in some bad situations, which it might just be the jitters of playing his first game back up with the Leafs, but I thought Lyles bailed him out there a few times. And initially going into the game, I didn't really agree with the pairing of those two on the same on the same line, and it worked out okay, and maybe, given some time, he'll work out the bugs, or Carlisle probably, sit him down and tell him to stop going too crazy.
Well, I don't think you're the only one who noticed that, because I was just looking at the box score, and he played the most of any player after the first period, a little under 8.5 minutes, but he finished the game only playing 19 minutes and 20 seconds. He finished minus one, so he was on one goal. So I think that he definitely was impressive with his skating, as everyone knows that he is, but like you said, he needs to keep it simple. It's not the American Hockey League where you have the chance to put up nearly a point a game. There's only a few defensemen in the NHL who have that ability. So going forward, I'd like to see him keep it simple, especially heading into tonight's game in Buffalo. Yeah, less is more.
Yeah, and speaking of people going crazy, I thought Loophole, he's got to calm down a little bit too. I mean, I know I sent out a tweet last night saying that playing with tenacity is good, but what he did there was just insane. Like, the elbow to the head of Hedman and that tripping penalty after they just scored a goal. I mean, it was kind of silly. It's just, he seems like he's trying to do too much as well when all he should be doing is scoring goals.
Right, and that's the thing that people are pointing out in his return is that he had, I believe, 3 goals in his first 4 periods back, and now after 2 games, yeah, he has 3 goals in 2 games, but on the flip side of that, he has 4 penalties in 2 games, which is outrageous, and he needs to, as you said, control himself a little better. He probably is amped up. He missed a lot of time and wants to contribute, but like you said, he's got a wicked shot. He's a good player, and just simplify your game, go to the net, but don't try and do too much. I know it's cliche, but I think in this case it works.
And depending on how his hearing goes this afternoon, he might not be in the lineup against the Sabres tonight.
Yeah, he might be suspended now too. So,
so last night Kadri chipped in with 3 assists, and his line, which includes Loophole and Kuhlman, actually got some minutes against Tampa Bay's top line of Stamkos, San Luis, and Konecker. What do you guys make of that?
I think Kadri actually has been able to show so far that when he's given the opportunity to be put in a tough situation, he comes out ahead more times than he doesn't, and I think the faith that Carlisle has been putting into Kadri that wasn't there when Ron Wilson was still the head coach is going much further with Kadri than it would have before, because he's finding some inner confidence, I think, and he was known as a guy that was not so good defensively, and he wasn't a very good two-way guy, but he's been stepping up against. Last night, I mean, he was playing against Stamkos' line for the majority of the game, and they did a very good job against him. So I think maybe going forward, he potentially could play a first-line center role or, you know, second line, which he is now. And I don't know. I see good things for him, I guess.
I also like the addition of Kuhlman. I know last week I said that he shouldn't be in the lineup, and when I heard about the line combinations that had, as you said, Loophole with Kadri and Kuhlman, I thought, why isn't a guy like Matt Fratton here as opposed to Kuhlman, who had, you know, 2 goals in the first 20 some odd games of the season, and now he has goals in back-to-back games. And as much credit as people want to give Kadri for checking Stamkos and also talking about how nice a goal Kuhlman scored last night, I was really impressed with the checking of Kuhlman on that line, specifically St. Louis, who still managed to pick up an assist, but he's the second leading assist guy in the league after a guy by the name of Crosby. So I think holding them to 1 assist and Stamkos was nearly invisible, I thought he did a really good job.
And one final storyline from the game. James Reimer carries a shutout into the third period. What did you guys think of his performance? Anything of note there?
Yeah, he came back in after not playing the last game. Well, he came in relief on Saturday night against Winnipeg, but he did a good job when he was spelling Scrivens there. And I think there was some talk yesterday, somebody was saying that Scrivens getting the nod last night, which I thought was a bit ridiculous. I know Robin did too. And I just think Reimer needs to be given the net almost permanently as the number one, because this happened last year where they did the kind of goalie merry-go-round, and it was bad for both the goaltender's confidence, and I think just giving Reimer the net is maybe a good idea, as long as he keeps playing steady, and he did last night. I know the two goals were, they weren't like very suspect goals, so he's doing okay.
That's the thing. The defense just fell asleep, and if I was Reimer, I'd be kind of pissed off. They played really well for two periods, but the third, yeah, Tampa came on a little bit, but like the defensive zone coverage there was pretty horrendous. So, and like you said, I would also like to see someone appointed as the number one. In this case, yeah, it should be Reimer, clearly, based on numbers, based on who's more deserving, whatever. I don't really know how you could make a case for Scrivens. And we're coming down the stretch, and how many times have you heard of a team going into the playoffs saying, oh yeah, I think the best option is to rotate our goalies, or, you know, rotate them in the playoffs based on who wins? It doesn't happen. So I think Randy Carlyle needs to make a statement tonight and throw Reimer right back in there.
When we return on the RPM Roundtable, we will preview the MLB Central and East Divisions. Let me introduce you to another type of rapper, MC. Well, glamour and glitter don't matter. We'll start with a quick recap of the division standings in the NL Central last season. The Cincinnati Reds won the division with a record of 97-65. The Cardinals finished second and were the wild card team with a record of 88-74. The Milwaukee Brewers were 83-79. The Pittsburgh Pirates were 79-83. The Chicago Cubs were 61-101. I actually forgot that they were that bad. And in the basement, the Houston Astros were 55-107. It's been well documented that the Houston Astros are moving over to the AL West this year. So we've decided among us that the Chicago Cubs are going to finish last in the division. We're pretty confident that the Cincinnati Reds are going to win the division. So what we want to do is look at the three middle teams, the Cardinals, the Brewers, and the Pirates. So Robin, let's start with the Cardinals. To me, they just look like a solid all-around team on paper.
Yeah, that's how I view the Cardinals as well. The 2012 World Series champion Giants, I think we're in pretty much the same boat. I'm not saying St. Louis is going to win the World Series this year, but I see a lot of similarities, a lot of under-the-radar guys, not necessarily stars, but solid players. In the outfield, you've got guys like Matt Holliday as well as Carlos Beltran getting on in their careers, but basically what the Cardinals are counting on, and what I think realistically from them, is that they can continue their solid production another couple of good years. And behind the plate, they've got Yadier Molina, who known more for his defense than his offense, being one of the three Molina brothers, but he's a solid player and probably better offensively than either of his two brothers.
And maybe faster too.
Yeah, he's, well, I don't think he could be any slower. But they've also got some solid young players who have come through their system, guys like John Jay, who quietly hit 305 in 117 games last year, and probably the most under-the-radar player in all of baseball, their first baseman, Alan Craig, who hit 307 with 22 home runs and 92 RBIs in only 119 games. So I think he can be counted on to have a big year. And at the top of the rotation, they're counting on Adam Wainwright, who has had his injury problems, but when he's healthy, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. So I look at this team, and they don't wow you with their talent, but I see them being a solid team.
And just remind me, what's the status of Chris Carpenter?
Oh, he hurt himself the other day. He's got a shoulder issue, and he's contemplating retirement.
Oh yeah, I just looked now, and he is on the 60-day DL. Yeah. So he's been removed from the 40-man. As I said,
he's not going to play this year at all.
He's battled a lot of injuries throughout his career, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So let's now take a look at the Milwaukee Brewers. In 2011, they won the division with 96 wins. Prior to last season, they lost Prince Fielder in free agency. He went to the Tigers. So they dropped down to 83 wins last year. Mike, do you see any reason for optimism for this team this season?
Yeah, I think the departure of Prince Fielder's given them an opportunity to take a look at some of their younger players, like Aoki in the outfield, Martin Maldonado. He's a catcher. He's a great defensive catcher, but with Luke Arroy in front, I think that he's going to play a backup role. They have Willy Peralta, a top pitching prospect. He made his debut last year, and he went 3-2 in 5 starts. So there's some reason for optimism there for sure. Their ace, Giovanni Gallardo, he had the second most quality starts in the NL last year with 25. And he's had 4 straight seasons with 200-plus strikeouts. They also had the opportunity to take a look at Mike Fears, another pitcher, right-hander. I think he was 3rd among NL rookies with wins last year, and he had 135 strikeouts. Obviously, their bullpen's pretty decent with closer John Axford there. They've got a couple good left-handers when Mike Gonzalez and Tom Gorzlany. So I think definitely there's reason for optimism. Obviously, Ryan Braun, all-star. He's
steroid user.
Allegedly. He's the only player in the majors with 100 runs and RBIs in the last 4 seasons. And obviously, veteran Ricky Weeks at second base. He had a slow start last year, but he finished the season off very strong, and hopefully that carries over into this year. And not to be forgotten, Corey Hart and Aramis Ramirez. And Ramirez actually kind of stepped up. He was known as a pretty low average hitter, but he had a ton of power. But he stepped up last year and he raised his average from 218 to 300. So there's definitely a lot of positives there in Milwaukee. I think that some of their young guys coming up, definitely in their rotation, is fairly young. And it seems like they have a decent amount of veterans around to kind of morph these guys into good major leaguers.
You also stumbled upon another really good musical reference with Corey Hart there. Last week we had Carlos Santana. We're really on a roll here.
Oh yeah. Corey Hart, Wear My Sunglasses at Night.
Yeah. That's the classic tune. I want to end off with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't know why, but I have a soft spot for this team. I went to PNC Park once and just fell in love with the stadium, probably because all I ever knew before that was the Sky Dome or the Rogers Center. So it's just a little bit of a step up.
Yeah, it's not a concrete bowl.
Yeah, exactly. On July 18th of last season, the Pittsburgh Pirates were in first place in the division with a record of 51-40. On August 8th, they got up to 16 games above 500, but by then they were 2.5 games behind the Reds. From there, they slid and only ended up winning 79 games and were 9 back of the wild card. The first thing that I love about this team is the middle of their order with Andrew McCutchen, Pedro Alvarez, and Garrett Jones. What do you guys think of that combination of hitting a lot of doubles, a lot of home runs?
I think that that's what the middle of the order should do, but other than McCutchen, I'm not overly sold. Pedro Alvarez was a high pick who I would have to say is on his last chance with Pittsburgh. He still is yet to put together a solid season. I mean, last year in 149 games, yeah, he hit 30 home runs, but he's a career 237 hitter. And I think they need a lot more out of him. He also needs to prove that it wasn't a total fluke, because before that, his previous career high was 16 home runs. And Garrett Jones is a guy, yeah, he's got a ton of power. And he's, if you go on YouTube and search Garrett Jones, you can see him hit a few balls well over 400 feet. But I'm not totally sold on him as a bona fide first baseman on a good team. They did sign Gabby Sanchez, formerly of the Marlins, to back him up. I like that signing a lot. He's had some success in the past. So if these guys can develop in Alvarez and Jones, I think they've got a good chance. Andrew McCutchen is a star, and a fantastic player who I think will just keep getting better. So I think as you pointed out, it'll be based on the middle of the lineup, how Pittsburgh does.
So does Travis Snyder remain a 4A player for those guys?
Nowhere to go but up, I guess.
Yeah,
but
it just seems like he's been a prospect his whole career, and he's never really come into his own.
Just want to take a quick look at their pitching staff. The top of the rotation, they have, I don't know if this is the correct order, but you have A.J. Burnett, who Jays fans are familiar with, Wandy Rodriguez, and James McDonald. Robin, what do you think of that top three right there?
That's the correct order. Okay. But I don't know. It depends what A.J. Burnett you get. If you get the A.J. Burnett of last year, where he stayed relatively healthy, didn't give up a ton of home runs, didn't lead the league in wild pitches, all the stuff that you get with A.J. Burnett, then you're looking at a really good pitcher and a guy who, I'm not going to say he's an ace, but a solid pitcher. But if you get the guy that was injury-plagued and couldn't find the plate, then they're going to be in for a long season. James McDonald needs to build on last year, in my opinion. He had a very nice season, but is still fairly unproven, and it's not like he was a top prospect who it was just coming into his own. He'd been in the league for a few years. And Wandy Rodriguez, yeah, interesting signing. Kind of fell off in Houston, but he put up a couple of pretty good seasons. So I think Pittsburgh could be very hit or very miss. I could see them winning as many as 85, 90 games or losing 100. So be an interesting season for sure.
I'd be remiss not to mention the fact that they traded for former Jays utility guy John McDonald yesterday.
That's right, yeah.
With the Diamondbacks.
And I just, you know, it's always important to have that shutdown guy in the bullpen. They traded away closer Joel Hanrahan to Boston. They re-signed Jason Grilley, who had drawn interest from other teams, including the Blue Jays. He hasn't been a closer yet in his career, I don't believe. Robin, what do you think of Jason Grilley stepping into the closer role there?
I think that's a little bit risky, to tell you the truth. As you said, he hasn't closed in his major league career. He has 5 saves in 11 opportunities in his career, which has been pretty lengthy. So I think that's a problem. I've heard some rumblings out of Boston that they're looking to trade the closer they got from Oakland, Andrew Bailey. I think it would be pretty funny if Boston chose Hanrahan over Bailey and then shipped Bailey to Pittsburgh. But no, I don't think that's a good idea, using Grilley.
When the RPM Roundtable returns, we'll look at the NL East. In the 2012 season, the Washington Nationals won the NL East with a record of 98-64. Atlanta finished second and grabbed the wild card. They were 94-68. The Philadelphia Phillies were in third with a record of 81-81. The Mets were in fourth with a record of 74-88. And in last place, the Miami Marlins were 69-93. As we like to do, we usually eliminate the bottom and the top teams. I'm not totally willing to award the division to the Washington Nationals, but I think it's fair to say that the Mets and Marlins are out of the conversation.
That's fair.
So I just want to start with the Phillies. Mike, do you think the window is closing for them?
I think so, yeah. I mean, Jimmy Rollins is getting up there in age. Chase Utley's got wonky knees. Ryan Howard wasn't really healthy last year. Roy Halladay, obviously, he didn't, for the first time in a decade, he didn't pitch a complete game last year, which is, I know that's pretty high expectations for a guy, but when you're talking about the Doc, I mean, that's a pretty consistent thing from him. And I believe he's sort of regressing, I think, and just that age is catching up to him, much like many of the players on the Phillies. And I think that they have a lot of young talent too. However, a lot of it has been traded away. And I think
J-Hap.
Well. Carlos Ruiz. He had a fantastic season last year. He was one of the best catchers in the league offensively, but...
Isn't he suspended? I believe he is.
Yeah.
For testing positive for something, yeah.
Yeah. Their bullpen, Jonathan Papelbon, had 30 saves last year. Mike Adams, they picked up. He's a good guy in their bullpen. They definitely needed somebody else to fill in that eighth inning role. They've got a Canadian pitcher, actually, Philippe Aumont. He pitched for Canada in the World Baseball Classic, and he pitches up into the high 90s, and he needs to throw more strikes, but I think he can develop into a pretty good arm in their bullpen, as he showed in the World Baseball Classic. He's able to work out of a jam. Their rotation, obviously Cole Hamels at the top and Cliff Lee, they are both pretty good guys to have. 216 strikeouts last year for Hamels, which was a career high. Kyle Kendrick, he's not going to give you the same stuff those guys can. However, he's very durable. He's never been on the disabled list in his career. So, I mean, I think the time is sort of coming short for the Phillies, but I think that they can still compete this year in the division.
And the Atlanta Braves, in my mind, for some reason, an unheralded contender, but they just seem to be, I don't know, stacked really at every position. Robin, what do you think about the Braves?
I totally agree with you there. They picked up a pair of Uptons in the offseason, signing BJ from the Tampa Bay Rays and acquiring Justin Upton from the Diamondbacks.
Brothers, obviously.
What's that?
They're brothers.
Yeah, exactly. And Justin was the first overall pick, and people like to say he hasn't lived up to his potential, and that's fair because the expectations that come with being, never mind a first-round pick, but a first overall pick are huge. But to this point in his career, he's averaged .278 batting average with a .357 on base, 24 home runs, and 80 RBIs, which is still pretty good. I mean, it's not up there with the elite players in the game, but pretty respectable. So I think that the Diamondbacks gave up on him too early. And the Uptons join an outfield that already has Jason Hayward, who is another young, budding superstar. And on that team, you've also got a guy just back from the World Baseball Classic, and he actually hit two home runs in a spring game yesterday, Andrelton Simmons, the young shortstop who represented the Netherlands. So there's lots of promise in this lineup, and I think that the key will be getting a bounce back year from a couple of veterans who slumped pretty badly last year, Dan Ugla and Brian McCann. McCann's was through injury, Ugla's was, I don't even know what. He struck out too much. He committed a lot of errors. It was a bit of a disaster for him. So I see this team doing very well, definitely competing. I see them in the playoffs for sure, but competing for the division with the Nationals. And they've also got a trio of young pitchers in Brandon Beachy, Chris Medlin, and Mike Minor, who I've seen a few comparisons to the big three back in the day of John Smoltz, Tom Glavin, and Greg Maddux. At this point, it's fairly premature, I think, but if they keep developing, you never know. And I just wanted to point out a stat from Chris Medlin. In 2012, he was 10-1 in 12 starts, which is really impressive, and had an ERA under 2. So on top of that, they've got arguably the best closer in the game in Craig Kimbrell. So I don't see a lot of holes. I think that this team is built for success now and in the future. And honestly, I'm not sure what could go wrong for them. I don't see anything.
Yeah, and Brandon Beachy is recovering from a Tommy John. He's aiming to return around the All-Star break this year. And to fill in for him, they have Randall Delgado in the 5 spot, and also Julio Tehran, who we shouldn't forget about. He's a pretty highly touted pitching prospect who Didn't have a very good year last year. However, he plans on battling Delgado for that fifth spot. I also think, I mean, their bullpen's a really, really big strength for them with Jordan Walden and Johnny Venters kind of shoring up that seventh, eighth inning for them before Kimbrel comes in, and obviously he's going to shut it down almost every time. Dan Uggla, actually, you were saying he had a career low 220 batting average last year, so I think that was definitely his issue. Losing Martin Prado this year, I don't think that's going to hurt them that much, even though he is a career 295 hitter, but they've got guys that can come in and replace his production. So I agree. I think the Braves, for sure, they're going to be probably challenging the Nationals for the top of the division, and I almost think it's a guarantee they'll make the playoffs this year.
I'm going to make a bold prediction here and say that if he doesn't win it, it'll be because of Matt Kemp, but Justin Upton is my MVP pick going into this season. So you heard it here first.
And finally, let's look at the Washington Nationals, who are potentially the favorite to win the division. Have a lot of exciting players on that team. Obviously, Steven Strasburg, Gio Gonzalez, and Bryce Harper. It's kind of the core of that team. Are there any holes in this lineup?
I'm not sure whether there are holes per se, but what I need to see from the Nationals is that last year wasn't not a fluke, but that it can be sustained or repeated. They had really good seasons from guys like Gio Gonzalez, who they got from the A's, who was a solid player, but has come out of basically nowhere to be, I don't know, what do you think, Mike, one of the top 10 pitchers in the game?
I would say so, yeah.
So, I need to see not more from him, but more from the other guys in the rotation. Guys like Jordan Zimmerman, Ross Detwiller, guys like that. And other than that, I mean, no, there aren't a ton of holes. I like their middle infield pairing of Ian Desmond and Danny Espinosa. On the corners, they've got Adam LaRoche and Ryan Zimmerman, who are still productive. And obviously, how can you talk about the Nationals and not mention Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg, who people think are going to be stars for years to come? What do you see the Nationals doing?
Well, I kind of agree with you. Can they duplicate what they did last season? I mean, they kind of built their program gradually, right? Like, last season wasn't just out of nowhere. Am I correct?
So certainly, yeah.
They may be just only scratching the surface of what they can do. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, in 2010 they had 69 wins. In 2011 they had 80 wins, and then last year obviously 98 wins. So I think their curve is definitely in the up. And actually, just to speak on Steven Strasburg's behalf a little bit, I thought last year it was kind of, I know the whole innings limit thing was a big debate last year, but I think whenever you get a chance to go for it in the playoffs, how do you not have your best pitcher going for you? I don't care what innings limit there is. I mean, that's just silly. You get a chance, you're in the playoffs, you got a chance to go for the World Series, you have to go for it because you might not be there for 10 more years. So that's my, I don't know, that's my two cents on that.
Yeah, I was actually just looking, too, and I had totally forgotten, but they have Drew Storen and Tyler Clippard pitching their seventh and eighth innings now. I know that both of them had injury problems, and it was sort of an ongoing debate, but they signed Rafael Soriano to end that debate. So those are two guys who could be closing, and now they're in the seventh and eighth, and also veterans Jason Wirth, and they traded for Denard Span. So solid team, solid lineup overall.
Next up on the RPM Roundtable, Mike will present the Man of the Week.
What's the beat? I'm on your case, I'm in your face, I'll kick you in your bottom back and fight. Step up, sucker, I'm the slam, don't you know that?
I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm so bad, I should be detention. I'm the man!
Okay, so this week's Man of the Week goes to Fox News anchor Andy Levy. He got into a Twitter battle with Chris Brown As you know, Chris Brown was arrested for beating up Rihanna. Chris Brown sent out a tweet saying, "No more planking for me unless it's on a sexy lady, LOL." And Fox News anchor Andy Levy responded with, "You spelled punching wrong." So Chris Brown responded, "Children conduct themselves better. Much love and success." Now, in terms of Twitter battle, that's where everything should end. However, Andy Levy went on to national television and wrote this apology to Chris Brown. "I apologize for referencing the fact that you beat the crap out of Rihanna. It was disrespectful of me to draw attention to the fact that you put your girlfriend in the hospital, and further, it was not my place to make people remember that you beat a woman with your fists, leaving her with multiple facial contusions, a bloody nose, and a split lip. I now know that. I also appreciate that you tweeted me letting me know that children conduct themselves better than I do. You are correct, and I can only hope that one day I mature to the point where I can conduct myself in a more adult manner, possibly by throwing a chair out of a window and storming out of a building with my shirt off. I only ask you for your patience. To Team Breezy, I would also like to say that I'm sorry and thank you for your thousands of tweets that taught me a lot about the creative possibilities of spelling, grammar, and syntax. In particular, I would like to thank the female members of Team Breezy who have taught me that as long as you can sing, you can beat the living hell out of a woman and other women will still love you." So this is a very, very creative response by Andy Levy, and the man of the week goes to him for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, cover your ears, hide your women and kids. It's time for Robin's rant, and I mean rant.
So other than Miami's win streak that now sits at 24 games, the next most newsworthy thing are the two huge dunks from the past week. You've got DeAndre Jordan's dunk on Brandon Knight and LeBron James's dunk on Jason Terry. So just to provide some information for you, Brandon Knight is 6'3", 190 pounds. DeAndre Jordan is 6'11", and 265 pounds. Conversely, LeBron James is 6'8", 250, while Jason Terry is 6'2", 180. And the reason I gave you those is to make the point that one of those guys, the guy dunking the ball, has a huge size advantage over the other guy. So all this stuff about, oh, this is embarrassing, he got dunked on, oh my God, like, look at him, let's put up YouTube videos and make those moving pictures of whatever they're called on the internet. That's totally insane. The talking point here should be that these guys tried to play defense, didn't give up an easy basket, and did their job. I mean, as a coach or as a fan, you should commend these guys for not just moving out of the way, being cowards, and giving up points. I mean, DeAndre Jordan, you know what's embarrassing? He's a career 43% free throw shooter, averaging 6.5 points and 6 rebounds. So people say, oh yeah, Brandon Knight should be embarrassed for getting dunked on and the dunk of the year and Jason Terry, blah, blah, blah. No. What's embarrassing is that you're a professional basketball player playing in the NBA and you shoot 43% from the free throw line.
Thank you for listening to the RPM Roundtable Podcast.